Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments, dedicated to a prudent approach to investing. Produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Feel that? Not the regular Friday unwinding. Something a little more subtle, like maybe the oomph being let out of the stock market. Don't look now, but the Dow just finished its worst week since August. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Reuters, the world's news and information source, working to make a difference every day. Before it's news, it's Reuters. Sustainability coverage supported by Calvert, mutual funds, college savings, and retirement investments in companies committed to responsible environmental, social, and governance practices. Calvert.com.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Happy Friday, everybody. It's the 23rd of February. Great to have you with us, as always. There are certain definitions that are helpful to have handy when you're talking about Wall Street. A 20% drop officially makes it a bear market. 10% is a market correction. Today's close of the Dow, down not even a full percent, was nowhere close. But things have been so strong for so long that three down days in a row are raising some eyebrows. We asked Marketplace's Elisa Roth to find out what's going on.
There are plenty of factors that could be pulling stock prices down. Art Hogan is a market analyst at Jefferies.
Increasing concerns about what's happening in Iran, subprime mortgage companies that are having difficulties. We're also seeing higher energy prices. We're seeing a slowdown in housing stocks.
Those aren't the only factors. Other commodity prices are high, too. And earlier this week, the price of gold was at the highest it's been in nearly a year. Some analysts are even raising the specter of inflation. Then again, others say a strong bond market suggests inflation's not a worry. Hogan says all those macroeconomic reasons may be making investors squeamish, but mostly, he says, people are thinking too hard.
One of the biggest reasons we're seeing a two-day pullback is because we haven't seen one.
He points out that since July, the market's only been going up, and last month it seemed to set a record every couple of days. Phil Roth at Miller Tabak, we're not related, by the way, says what's more important is that there's nothing to worry about.
There's a sort of a worry message in the market. But since we've had no worry for so long, you can't conclude it's the end of the world here. I mean, the market hasn't had any kind of a pullback in so long. Even a little one wouldn't necessarily do a lot of damage to the market.
That is, as long as it doesn't drag on. Analyst Hogan says this little drop could turn into something serious if something were to happen in Iran or North Korea, or if subprime mortgage lenders started to get into real trouble. But then he cautions there's no way to predict that happening. In New York, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Former Iowa Governor Tom Vilsack was the first Democrat officially in the 2008 presidential race. Today, he was the first one out, not because he thought he couldn't win.
It is money and only money that is the reason that we are leaving today.
Not a word in the statement from the Vilsack campaign about the candidates that are sucking all the air out of the fundraising room. Washington's been quiet this week with a congressional recess, but Democrats are working behind closed doors on a way to stop the war in Iraq. In the Senate, they're drafting a repeal of the 2002 authorization to go to war in the first place. Over on the House side, there are some questions about a strategy of trying to cut off the money. Marketplace's John Dimsdale has more.
The Pentagon needs congressional approval of $100 billion to continue fighting the war beyond April. An American University presidential scholar, James Thurber, says when it comes to the power of the purse, the president has to take notice.
Well, he can't ignore appropriations. If in an appropriation bill they say he may not do a particular thing, then it's unconstitutional.
One attempt to stop the surge comes from the powerful chairman of the House Defense Appropriations Committee, John Murtha of Pennsylvania. He would link funding to readiness requirements. Only fully equipped and trained troops could go to Iraq. But that poses a risk to soldiers already there, says the Brookings Institution's Michael O'Hanlon.
Congressman Murtha is going to deprive the commanders in the field and the troops who are already in Iraq of the kind of reinforcements that might make their lives easier and their mission more successful.
Several moderate Democrats have also criticized Congressman Murtha's idea. And at the White House, presidential spokesman Tony Fredo says the president can't figure out what the Democrats want.
As I look out and see reports for what's coming from the Democrats with respect to Iraq, is you know, really a shifting landscape of ideas, all with the intention of keeping our troops from getting what we feel getting what they need to carry out their mission.
Some Democrats recommend waiting to confront the president until this fall, when the budget for 2008 must be passed. By that time, they figure the troop surge will have failed to reduce the violence in Iraq. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
Shares of the French company Alcatel-Lucent added 2.5% in Paris today. A federal jury in California has ordered Microsoft to cough up $1.5 billion for infringing on Alcatel's MP3 patents. Sarah Gardner reports the ruling might spell trouble for hundreds of other companies that turn music into ones and zeros.
Microsoft uses MP3 in its Windows Media software. It argued in court that it had already shelled out $16 million to a German research group for an MP3 license, the rightful licensor, in its opinion. But the jury sided with Alcatel-Lucent, whose lawyers argued that their company invented MP3 and, quote, everybody else was making money off of it. Technology analyst Rob Enderle, who has Microsoft as a retainer client, says the outcome of this case surprised him.
We didn't really think this one was going to be big or important. It turned out to be both.
Enderle says the verdict has serious implications for Apple, Hewlett-Packard, and all the other companies that licensed the MP3 technology from the same German outfit as Microsoft. He says Alcatel could end up suing them for patent infringement as well. But that could be years away. Intellectual property attorney Daniel Harris expects Alcatel will wait for the results of other related litigation, and Microsoft will likely appeal this verdict.
And it's far from certain whether this $1.5 billion judgment is going to be left standing at the end of the day.
An Alcatel spokeswoman today said she wouldn't speculate whether it would go after other companies that use MP3. But analyst Rob Enderle says Alcatel may start quietly approaching firms like Apple. He guesses it will offer them a cheaper licensing deal if they pay up now. Still, those companies may just want to hedge their bets and see if the verdict against Microsoft will be reversed. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
Down for the day, mixed for the week. We'll have the details and so much more when we do the numbers. Today's the first Friday of Lent, the period between Ash Wednesday and Easter, during which many Catholics and some Protestants traditionally give up meat. To cash in on it, the fast food giant KFC is rolling out a new fish sandwich, and the company's asking for a little plug from on high. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
KFC's president asked Pope Benedict to bless the new fish snacker sandwich. No reply yet, but Vatican historian Gerald Fogarty says good luck getting a papal endorsement.
It's like the policy in times of war where they remain impartial.
And it's not like the fish business needs marketing help. Sales typically jump this time of year as the faithful give up meat. KFC's sister company, the seafood chain Long John Silver's, says the Lenten season is its busiest. Catholics make up about a quarter of the U.S. population, so they've got some buying power. Amelia Napa manages Cosentino's fish market in Brooklyn. In her 19 years at the shop, she's seen observance of Lent wax and wane with the times. Take the first Gulf War 16 years ago.
We were very, very crowded all through Lent. They came in every Wednesday and every Friday and bought fish. And I asked them, because, you know, some of them were new faces, and it was mainly their way of atoning so that God hears them.
Napa says business has picked up during this war, too. Trouble is, she says, when demand grows, wholesalers raise their prices. So her shop does, too. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
You can sort of forgive KFC's parent Yum Brands for looking for some divine intervention. A New York News Channel ran footage this morning of rats having a field day in one of the company's restaurants down in Greenwich Village. In December, more than 100 people got sick after eating E. coli-tainted lettuce at one of their Taco Bells. Anybody else sick and tired of all the Oscar hype yet? If you believe what you read about the only big award still up in the air is Best Picture, and when the golden statues are handed out on Sunday, odds are at least one of them will go to a film backed by a hedge fund. Hedge funds and private equity groups are becoming the stars of Hollywood film financing to the tune of billions of dollars. Pat Loeb reports.
They used to call it dumb money. Rich people writing a big check to back a movie in hopes of buying into the glamour of Hollywood. It seldom paid off. But dealmaker Ryan Kavanaugh says those were the old days.
We're not in this business to, you know, go hang out with actors or go hang out on a movie set.
Kavanaugh is the founder of Relativity Media. He calls his company the bridge between Wall Street and Hollywood. Kavanaugh arranges deals with movie studios for large investors such as hedge funds. He deals with such solid institutions as Citigroup and Deutsche Bank. It's a far cry from this star-struck millionaire backing a particular movie, but it's still a tricky business.
There's a huge barrier to entry to get into Hollywood. There's very few access points.
That's where Kavanaugh comes in. He grew up in Hollywood, the son of a successful doctor, so he has a social in. When studios began looking around for some third-party funding, he was someone they trusted. There are few people like that in Hollywood. Another major player is Thomas Tull of Legendary Pictures, and movie star Tom Cruise attracted private equity investment for his own movie ventures. The funds are secretive about what kinds of returns they're getting. None of the banks or investors would comment for this story. One of the first movies financed with hedge fund money was Poseidon.
You feel that? Something's off.
Yes, the film sank, much like the ship, and the investors lost money on that one. But the hallmark of these newer investments is that the funds back a slate of several films coming out of a particular studio, and some of those films have done very well.
Ricky Bobby was born to become the fastest man alive.
That's my boy, Ricky!
Kavanaugh's Relativity Media arranged financing for Will Ferrell's Talladega Nights. Think what you will about it, it made money for the investors.
Relativity?
Kavanaugh is 32. He has red hair and freckles and looks barely old enough to shave, let alone play with billions of dollars. But he has a formula for picking movies that he says will be solid investments.
We look at it like we would any other product, whether it's real estate or roads or bridges or oil or venture capital or distressed debt. You know, our goal and our belief is that Hollywood can become that.
Kavanaugh has an exhaustive database of movies in his computer, and he uses standard banking tools such as regression analysis to look at a host of variables, who stars, who co-stars, who directs. He runs thousands of different scenarios on proposed films to decide whether to put them in his slate. Some analysts are skeptical of that approach. Mark Kimsey of K&Z Partners has raised money for media projects in Hollywood.
You know, there's a lot of factors that make it a very bizarre business, and a lot of people think that they can figure out how to make it more efficient.
But Kimsey says there are inherent conflicts. Studios want to keep money for themselves, and investors want to share in the profits. Kavanaugh says, again, those were the old days, and Hollywood is changing in order to keep investment money rolling in.
I don't think the studios actually expected the capital to be as big and as consistent as it is. So I think they're also really now, for the first time, saying these are our partners for a long time and we better take care of them.
Louis, I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
In Los Angeles, I'm Pat Loeb for Marketplace.
Well, here we are on a Friday afternoon. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. How are you, sir?
Another rigorous four-day week it was.
Yeah, it's killing you, right?
No, actually, this one felt longer because the last couple of days, the market hadn't been that bad, but it's kind of felt bad. We've had a lot of negative vibrations out there. And actually, this was the worst week for the Dow Jones Industrials Average since the middle of August, and the Dow was only down 120 points. I mean, I can remember, you know, half days when we dropped 120 points
well,
in the past.
Let me cast you back a couple of weeks, though. You basically said, you know what, we need a break. We're going to come due for a time here where we just need to relax for a minute. Is that where we are?
I think so. I don't think we need that 10% correction, or for that matter, even a 2% correction like they were talking about, because what we've had are these rolling corrections. In a rolling correction, there's some selling in stuff that's gone up. People take the profits. But instead of taking the money and, you know, burying it in their backyard or investing in their brother-in-law's franchise outfit or whatever, the money turns around and goes right back into the market. So they're selling some stuff and they're buying other stuff. I kind of think that's what was going on this week. The Dow was down 120 points.
Right.
But the NASDAQ was up 19 points. And the S&P was somewhere in the middle. It was down about 4 points. And we were all worried about housing, and there's never going to be another subprime lender in this country. And but by the same token, did you see what happened to gold and copper?
Exactly.
And oil?
Yep, absolutely.
There you go.
Well, but there were some real corporate stories this week, too. I mean, we had, as Sarah Gardner talked about up top, we had the Microsoft Alcatel thing, and that took a chunk out of Microsoft.
And we're going to be talking about that for another couple of years, probably. Mm-hmm. But a fascinating story. And, you know, we were talking last week about this Diamond or Chrysler story, and we were wondering if it has legs. And I'm here to tell you, that story's got legs. These people want to get rid of Chrysler like it's a very hot horseshoe.
I've never heard that one before. That's interesting.
How long does it take you to inspect a hot horseshoe? About that long. That's what.
Well,
it's a Texas thing.
Are you serious that they're serious about this, or are they just messing around with us?
I absolutely guarantee you, in a New York minute, they would get out of that situation. The problem is, I mean, it's just a can of worms, and you have all these legacy costs, and you have a moral and a legal and an ethical obligation to pay all these former employees all the money they're due. And so all the big car companies, well, the ones we've heard from so far, like Volkswagen and Nissan, Renault, and Hyundai, and others are saying, are you crazy? We have no interest.
The people that are nibbling are the people with more money, really, than they know what to do with, the hedge fund groups and the private equity guys.
I know. I every time I think about Carlyle or Cerberus or Blackstone or Apollo or any of these guys, I get this mental image of these carpetbaggers in sort of ill-fitting suits with big bags of money that's sort of creeping out the sides because there's so much of it. Because those guys will buy anything. At least that's what Chrysler's counting on.
They'll buy it, and then what are they going to do, strip it down and make their money and then sell it off again?
Well, of course, that's what they do, is they turn around and try to sell it to somebody else. It's the greater fool theory. You remember that?
Yeah, I do indeed. Well, we'll have to. So now we're looking for two greater fools. I guess we'll see. David Johnson down in Dallas, Texas. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Kai. Have a good weekend.
You too. Coming up, can you name this sound? We'll tell you the answer and why it's controversial in just a minute. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials fell 38 points today, nearly a third of 1%, to close at 12,647. The NASDAQ dipped 9 points, about 0.4%, to finish at 2515. The S&P 500 ticked down 5 points, more than a third of 1% there, ended the day at 1451. For the week, the Dow was down 0.9%. The S&P 500 dipped 0.3%. The NASDAQ was up 0.8%. Microsoft clicked off 1 2/3% today after being ordered to make that $1.5 billion payment the French telecom firm Alcatel-Lucent that Sarah Gardner told you about. Overseas, the markets were kind of mixed. Back home, bond prices rose. That means the yield on the 10-year T-note fell to 4.67%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Marketplace is supported by Putnam Investments. Since 1937, supporting the role that an experienced financial advisor can play in building a well-rounded financial program. And by the Redwoods Group, for supporting the Innovations Desk at North Carolina Public Radio. Conversations from the Corner Office, Dialogues with Top CEOs, is supported by the Society for Human Resource Management, HR, Leading People, Leading Organizations, shrm.org. Heard a report on Marketplace that you just have to share with your friends, family, or coworkers? Help is just a click away. Our website has each day's complete newscast, individual stories, and transcripts, so you can listen again, print them out, or email them to everyone you know. It's all at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a glance at what's coming up Monday. President Bush meets with the National Governors Association during its winter meeting. The Consumer Federation of America releases a survey on family emergency savings needs. And sports aren't the only activities that get extreme. The Center for Science and the Public Interest is at the National Press Club to talk about extreme eating and restaurant menus. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace from American Public Media. I'm Kai Rizdal. Michael Dell, the once and future CEO of the computer company he founded in his college dorm room, turns 42 years old today. He announced last month he's coming back to the executive suite. Dell lost its crown as the world's top PC maker while he was retired, but he said he wants to get back to number one again and be environmentally aware while he does it. So the company's going to ask consumers to donate $2 every time they buy a notebook, $6 when they buy a desktop, toward planting trees to offset the energy that PCs consume. And that, in turn, gave commentator Richard Conniff some pause.
There's something kind of silly about the idea of Michael Dell selling Power Hog computers and thinking he's going to get some feel-good global warming PR by planting a few seedlings. And it's not just Dell, either. The Rolling Stones used the same ploy in 2003 when they announced that their entire tour would be carbon neutral. The plan was to plant one tree for every 60 concertgoers to offset the greenhouse gas emissions produced by getting them, their equipment, and the fans to and from the stadium. Golly, those must have been the hardest working trees in rock and roll. It makes you wonder how many trees it would take to offset the Mercedes-Benz SUV the Rolling Stones were promoting as part of their 2006 tour. And this just in, the U.S. Energy Information Administration has the answer. It says one large sugar maple tree can pull 450 pounds of carbon dioxide per year from the atmosphere, and all it would take to offset the emissions from every car in America is preserving 31 such trees per car. Unfortunately, another U.S. government report says sugar maples are vanishing because of global warming. Don't get me wrong, I'm all for planting trees, but these schemes are ripe for voodoo accounting. I mean, how do you calculate how much a tree needs to grow to offset the energy you burned by leaving your computer on last night? And what if your tree goes poof in a forest fire? You start to understand why even environmentalists called these schemes a morning after pill for fossil fuel excess. If you want to fix global warming, the first step is to cut fossil fuel use. And when you can't cut anymore, then pay somebody else to cut their fossil fuel use. For instance, replace the inefficient old furnace in a local school building, or reward workers for using public transit instead of the parking lot. The only way those trees Michael Dell is planting will still be around for our grandchildren to enjoy is if we deal with the real problem now.
Richard Conniff's latest book is called The Ape in the Corner Office. Your thoughts are always welcome, Simeon or otherwise. Our homepage is marketplace.org. Nestle has been about more than just chocolate for a while now. It is the world's biggest food and beverage company, and times are very good. This morning it announced profits were up 14% last year after a restructuring to concentrate more on health and nutrition. It owns the weight loss center Jenny Craig now, as well as its long-held brands like Dreyer's Ice Cream and Perrier. But officials of the little town in the south of France where Nestle gets that bubbly water are giving company lawyers some indigestion. John Lawrenson went to the source in Vergès, France.
Hear that gloop gloop sound? Natural fizzy mineral water bubbling out of the ground. The Romans discovered it, and being Romans, bathed in it. In the Middle Ages, people called it bouillance because the water looked like it was boiling. Then, a century ago, a certain Dr. Perrier devised a way of reinforcing the fizz with gas from the spring, and a world-famous brand was born. Perrier has become the best-selling mineral water in the world. It sold over 800,000 bottles last year. At the town hall of Vergès, where the Perrier spring is situated, they're discussing financial support for the local basketball club. Two-thirds of the money this town receives comes from taxes paid by Nestlé. When, a few years ago, the Swiss multinational experimented with making a similar mineral water in Egypt, people here got nervous. So, says Mayor René Balana, they voted to put Perrier on the map, literally.
For some time now, there's been a climate of suspicion, talk of transferring production abroad, making Perrier elsewhere. We don't want to stop anyone doing what they're legally entitled to do, but over the years, people have gotten used to calling it the Perrier Springs, so we thought, why not just make that official?
Before Christmas, a French court ruled that they could keep using Perrier as a place name, at least until a more thorough judicial inquiry has been completed. but Nestlé does not intend to let Vergès have its way. Pierre-Alexandre Tellier, in charge of communications at Nestlé Waters France, says it's a matter of principle.
We are the owner. It's a registered trademark. We don't want to share it.
But aren't you sending out the wrong signals? Aren't you suggesting to people that you might want to produce Perrier water in another place?
That's not the topic. We are here to defend our rights on our brand.
But it could be the topic in the future.
Who knows what the life of a company can be in a few years?
At a bar in Vergès, I meet up and drink a little guess what with three of the 1,000 members of the Perrier Defence Association. Nestlé says this extraordinary group, What Other Brand Has a Supporters Club, is a front organisation for the communist-led CGT Labour Union. Its members include university professor and ex-Perrier employee Jacques Ferrer. He says the association is about keeping Perrier true to France and a very French idea. That idea is that, like wine or cheese, what makes a mineral water is not so much the maker, but the place it's made.
Il s'agit de d'eau minérale naturelle.
Perrier is a natural mineral water, not soda water, not seltzer water, natural. The water that comes out of the ground at this particular place contains a whole list of properties certified by the Ministry of Health. It's unique, like a wine. If a Bordeaux doesn't come from Bordeaux, it isn't a Bordeaux. It's the same for Perrier.
Nestlé disagrees. They say Perrier can be produced anywhere, something which could be valuable if sales increase dramatically in the future and supply from Vergès can no longer meet demand. What if, said the mayor as he accompanied me to the door, China starts drinking Perrier water? What's in a name? In this case, potentially a lot of money. In Vergès, southern France, this is John Lawrenson for Marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Marshall School of Business.
And this final note, those hedge funds and private equity groups Johnson and I were talking about and all that money they have, well, maybe they really will buy anything. CNBC is reporting this afternoon KKR is about to announce what would be the biggest leverage buyout of all time, somewhere north of $39 billion to buy the Texas utility TXU. TXU is the biggest power producer in the Lone Star State. Its stock has been on the way up the past couple of years, but it's been in some hot water recently over plans to spend more than $10 billion for a series of coal-fired power plants. Formal announcement Monday, probably. And that's Marketplace on this Friday afternoon from American Public Media. Today, the Dow down 38 points, nearly a third of 1%. The Nasdaq fell 9 points, 0.4%. The S&P 500 dropped 5 points, more than a third of a percent there as well. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace is produced by Celeste West, and the executive producer is J.J. Yore. Coming up on Monday, the second British invasion, or would it be the third?
I lived in the country in England when I was young, and it's just like it was 50 years ago in an English, tiny English farming community.
I'm Kai Rizdahl. Have yourself a great weekend.
American Public Media.